Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I am the spiritual leader of this community, and I'm really happy to see you all here because there are a lot of other things you could be doing right now in honor of the old dads. So we're happy to have an opportunity yet another Sunday, and of course, I was away last week on a surprise trip. Our son called us, this was very last minute, and said, come to California, come have some fun with us. We're going to celebrate. My grandson turned 16, my granddaughter promoted out of the eighth grade, and my daughter-in-law graduated with her master's degree. So they said, we're having a big family thing, come do it, and we did. I said, I can't, I have a gig on the weekends. And Hugh looked at me with those stern Father's Day eyes. We will go. Not really, but we went. It was really fun, and it's also really lovely to be back again. So welcome. I'm speaking this morning. The title of the message is Reflections and Revelations. And so I have an idea that I want to speak to you about what is a revelation and how do we define that in a sort of new thought, less religious sort of way. And the idea that I put the word reflections in there is because I want us to have an opportunity to reflect on the times where we have felt touched by God. I want us to be really aware that we are not alone in this walk of life and that there is always that which is greater than we are that walks with us, that really is us, you know, that inner, higher, wonderful, divine quality of life. And so if we remember the times, if we reflect to remember the times, we're more likely to be open to be present when we are touched by that same idea of a divine revelation, a gift of understanding, or a moment, an aha moment, whatever it is. And we want to put that all together. The quote that I found in the book Creative Mind and Success, which we all know because I say it every Sunday, is 101 years old in terms of how long it's been published by the founder of Science of Mind, Dr. Ernest Holmes. The quote reads this way. Revelation must keep faith with reason and religion with law, while intuition is ever spreading its wings for greater flights, and science must justify faith in the invisible. So, whoa, there are several things that have been spoken in that short little quote. And one is that revelation will always, he uses the term must, revelation will always keep faith with reason. So if something happens in your life and it doesn't seem reasonable, and if we aren't willing to look at the good things that come in our life, if we miss the opportunity to count them as precious divine gifts, then we've just missed that. So there's a connection there. Then he associates religion and law, and as I pondered this very carefully, I realize he's speaking about spirituality, our faith, which is based very law-based. There probably is no other faith that's based in law as religious science. Yes, thank you very much. Love the back row. Throw some peanuts back there for everybody. Keep this room alive because we got a lot of people celebrating today somewhere. And then that idea that intuition is, isn't that a gorgeous poetic line? Intuition is spreading its wings for greater flights. And so there's sort of this tie-in between revelation and intuition, and I'll give you his definition in a minute. But I love that those last ending words where he says, science must justify faith in the invisible. We are living in a time where science is justifying faith in that which cannot be seen. In fact, the whole idea of quantum physics is about that which we can't see with the naked eye. And yet we are such a crucial part of using it. Our entire life is about what uses it. Quantum physics describes our faith, is probably a sweeter way of saying it. So I usually, I take great, I can see my sparkle in the mirror. That's never happened before. Wow, nice, I'll stand over here. easily distracted. So I did something I don't usually do, and I was pondering the words intuition along with revelation, and I thought, you know, rather than look in the dictionary, I'm just going to see if Holmes addressed that in the glossary, because we have this big, fat glossary of terms in the back of the Science of Mind textbook, and doggone it if both those words weren't in there. And so he gives a rather long explanation or definition of what revelation is. I love that we have Dr. Holmes' definitions for us of what he meant by specific words. So when we're looking at the word revelation, he starts with this simple statement. It's about becoming consciously aware of hidden things. A revelation is becoming consciously aware of hidden things. So for me, it's always that it's that moment of not just remembering, but where I can sense the presence and the power of that which is greater, or the beauty, or the elegance, or the divine perfect order, the way things fit together so unimaginably. I like to think of that when I'm driving on the freeway, that, you know, yes, stuff happens, but isn't it incredible that we take a bunch of different people that are on the road for all kinds of different reasons, driving all kinds of different vehicles, and we find a way to make order out of that? And I think that that's a beautiful thing. And even though we don't like traffic, or maybe you don't like being on the road, I think it's a gorgeous thing to appreciate when you do need to be on the road. That's how I start my travel prayers all the time. Look at this incredible divine order here. And what happens when I do that is I trust everybody else to do their thing, because I know I have prayed myself into the perfect rhythm and harmony of where I need to be at all times. So this philosophy is useful for in many, many ways, in all ways, actually. So he goes on to enhance that. He has a lengthy idea explanation for revelation. But let me jump first to intuition. He says, intuition is God in man revealing the realities of being. God in us, spirit expressing as us. And so there's something in that way that we exist where we are always moving in that same movement of that intuitive, perfect knowledge and wisdom, so we can always access it. But it gets more clear when I look back at the rest of the definition for revelation. He speaks about a couple of interesting things, four statements I'm going to make. He said, their avenue is always open. Revelation, it's when we're aware, conscious of the presence of God in our life, that avenue is always open. Without fail, that avenue is always open. So if it appears that it is not, it is, don't be mad at yourself, don't be hard on yourself, certainly don't punish yourself, although I can absolve you of your sins. I got that power once, you know, a lot of years ago. But I mean, it's just a ritual. If you need it, I could do it. But the truth is, I know the truth about you, and that is that you are not disconnected from that wisdom, that you carry that higher wisdom, that intuition, that perfect knowing within you. So when it appears there's something standing between you and it, you know, there's a way we can remember. We just go back to truth and ask ourselves, but what do I know to be true about the presence of this infinite intelligence in my life? And if you're clear, and I think that's what spiritual practice is for, so that we can become clearer and maybe even more quickly move into remembering what we believe. Then we have that peace of mind in a much quicker and tidier way also. So the avenue is always open, one. And two, this one is interesting, always good to remember, you can't request it. You can't request it. You cannot request it. You cannot beg for it. You cannot beseech God for it. You cannot bribe God. You cannot barter with God. If you do this for me, I'll do that for you. I'll be really nice to that mean person at work if just you'll do this one favor for me, right? None of that fits in our teaching. We do not teach any of those things, because what we teach is that each individual is an individualized point of light, of truth, of God, and therefore you are always in direct contact with it. So you don't request it. You put the demand on yourself, I would say put the demand on the law, but really in this case it's about I am going to use my own conviction to remember that right where I am, God is. It's not like we make God magically appear. Because there is no place where God is not. I like to say that anytime I can. And number three, and here's where it gets kind of interesting. And we talked about this yesterday in that gorgeous workshop we had. It was an introductory workshop, so it's not too late to attend the class that will actually start in July. It'll be an afternoon class. Crafting your personal theology. We used to just call it a cosmology. In fact, that's what we study when we, in foundation class and in seminary. But cosmology is such a heavy word. So I like the idea that we're looking at crafting our own personal theology, looking at what you believe and how you are called to allow Spirit to express in your own life. And so here's what he says on that regard, that you can only get your own revelations. No one can receive a revelation for you. People can witness things. People can have ideas. But most of the time when people come to us and give us advice, we are projecting our own stuff, because it's nobody's business what's going on in another person's life unless we ask for help. Now that's a whole other story. If you make a phone call or contact somebody and say, I need to hash this out with somebody, now you've established a relationship and miraculous things can happen in that relationship because that person is going to help you get clear on your own inner wisdom, not tell you the answers or give you advice, because the secret to all of life is realizing that we all have equal access and certainly equal power. Therefore, it depends upon how willing we are to, to play in it, to dabble in it, to use it. So no one can receive a revelation for another person. And finally, revelation only comes when we turn within. And that's probably the most important thing, that it's not out here. It's not out away from you. It's always right where you are. So we're living in a time in history. Just think of that for a minute. We're living in a time in history where I believe we are not only intuiting and reasoning and witnessing change in the world, change on the planet, but we are witnessing change in every way. You know, there's the old is falling away and the new is trying to emerge, but we seem to be kind of right in the middle where we can't go back and we can't speed up time and go forward, and we're left here, and sometimes that feels like we're left alone, and sometimes things look scary or unstable or not so orderly. And our spiritual practice is the very thing that brings us back to being able to see things beyond appearances. When Holmes said that revelation is becoming consciously aware of hidden things, he's speaking about seeing beyond the appearances in the same way that Jesus spoke about that, that there's more going on. So if I'm in the middle of this chaos that is seemingly happening all around me, depends on your vision, I don't have that experience too much because I don't follow the news. I just, you bring it to me, you know, or I'll pick and choose what I want to read on the internet. So it's a little easier for me to keep my life stable because my personal theology has called me to do this my way. And so there's probably great reason in that. I think I can be a better leader. I want to know what's going on, but I don't want to be so impacted that it throws me a little sideways, which honestly it does sometimes. And that's not new. You know, so we are living in times that are indeed new, but what I want to tell you is that we are always living in changing times, and we are always living in this realm of something new is trying to emerge. And so we are sitting on the edge of that revelation all the time. The only question is, will you be open to receive? Will we be open to have a new perspective on the situations that we are moving through in our own life? And will we be courageous enough to make choices, to change our thinking, to take in information that will enhance our ability to recognize the revelation, to feel the presence of God, to sense the divine in all the activity of life itself? So something new is emerging, and yet it's already here, and every day it's fresh and new again. It's almost like it's a matter of, I want to say sitting still and opening to it, because I think a sitting practice is very useful. But I had such a great time listening yesterday with a large circle of people in the workshop. And what I see is that a lot of people get their divine information through yoga, through exercise, or taking a walk in nature. It was beautiful to hear people share their individual ways. I want to share a quote with you today from a 13th century mystic, Meister Eckhart, who was a Christian mystic and left us lots of words. And Dr. Holmes loved reading Meister Eckhart. He often quoted from Eckhart. And the quote that I found speaks to this conversation. So listen to these words. I become aware of something in me that flashes upon my reason. I perceive of it that it is something, but what it is I cannot see. It seems to me only that if I could conceive it, I would comprehend all truth. I know you need to hear that two or three times. I have the benefit of really having worked it this week. But I'm going to tell you, I love that idea, that flash of reason, because that's sometimes how it feels to me. It's like a tiny little glimpse. And I can feel some yearning in my heart, and I get a glimpse of something else, and I can't always figure out exactly what it is. Do you ever do that childhood game? I don't know why this stuff pops in my head, where you blindfolded and then you tasted, people would feed you food and you'd try and guess what it is. But it's tricky. If you can't see what it is, it takes a while. Plus, you can't necessarily trust whoever you're playing the game with. There was always that risk. Never play that game. Yeah, as a matter of fact, we didn't play that game after about this tall, did we? We all learned that. But the part of that Eckhart quote that really pleases me is that he said, it seems to me only. It seems, so he's like speaking, he's like privately speaking, going, you know, I'm just sitting in the privacy of my own little sitting chair or under my own little tree, and I'm having this thought, and I realize that not everybody's going to agree with it or be able to grasp it, but right here and right now, this is what I know. It seems to me that if I could conceive that flash of reason and understand it fully, that I would comprehend all truth. And so I think that's what I'm emphasizing this morning, is that it's okay to see things your way. In fact, it may be the only way we get true wisdom. And as we open ourselves to be gracious receivers, then we often will find that there's so much more waiting for us. And I think also that's why sometimes when you try and tell somebody about this great experience, you had this great mystical encounter or revelation, an aha or something, that if they don't respond, you know, in a like, oh, in the way that we're hoping they will, that they'll connect to it too, that sometimes it almost causes us to lose credibility with what happened. And I think that's why some of the great mystics also say, don't tell anybody. You know, if you've had this gorgeous, life-changing experience, plus, let's face it, the more you try and put it into words, the weaker it gets. We sort of water it down. But don't tell anybody, but cherish it, because it is yours. It is a gift that came uniquely to you because there is nobody else on the planet like you. There is no other soul on this planet that expresses God in the way that you do in your life. And that's a beautiful thing. That's a gorgeous thing. So we're reflecting, we're talking about those precious revelations in our own life, those sudden realizations of truth, that tiny glimpse, whatever it takes to get your full attention. And when it does, sometimes it's as if the entire world opens, your entire realm of understanding changes. The world shifts. It feels like the world shifts and suddenly you're in sync again. But the world doesn't shift. We do. We're the point of change. The miracle is in the shift in our perception. And the challenge is, are we open? Are we willing to change our perception or our perspective? And so I thought, okay, Miss Karen, nice work, good work. I like everything you wrote, but this is all so abstract. They need something more. You're going to need something, some more personal way to relate to this. So I thought that Hugh and I often have this conversation where we say, hi, honey, when we're at home. Happy Father's Day. I love you. Sorry, I won't be home at all today. Board meetings. Minister meetings, but I love you. Hugh and I have this talk. It's interesting to hear us, especially when we're telling our kids this story. So that shift, that sudden clarity of something, a good illustration of that is learning to drive a stick shift. So most of us go out, and now in my case, I learned to drive in the family's Rambler station wagon. But when I got my driver's license, my dad bought my mom a cute little VW Beetle so that she could have a brand new car. It was 1967. She could have a new car, and I was going to get the family Rambler. But I was happy. You know, a car's a car, right? So the V-dub and my mom, they didn't work out at all. They had to break up. Mom just could not figure out how to do it. Her cigarette kept hitting the windshield because it's right here. She'd go to the gas station, and the guy would go, pop the hood. And she'd go, no, I need gas. And it was very funny. And finally, my dad said, okay, that's enough. She gets a new car. We'll get rid of the Rambler. We'll get mom a car. We'll give Karen the little VW. And I loved it, but I had no idea how to drive stick shift. And now I had had the freedom of having my driver's license and getting around town, right? So my dad takes me out to teach me. Now, he had just worked with my mom just a few weeks before when she first tried to drive that car herself. Now he's with me, and it's like we're out in the school, high school parking lot, and where I'm, and he's, I don't know why he didn't worry about the clutch going out or something, but you know, it's all that, you know, all that stuff that happens. And he said, okay, that's enough for today. Get over. I'm driving home. And so he went home, and I just remembered thinking about it. Do you remember that? You just think about it, and suddenly it's like a bolt of lightning, like the truth washes over you. You have a flash of something, and you go, oh, I get it. And you embody it as an idea because you have a desire, right? It's your freedom in this case. The desire then opens the possibility, and you keep thinking about it, and you keep thinking about it, and you keep thinking about it. You do this, you do that, and it was, I'm telling you, and I know more people that tell the story the same way. It was like something washed over you and you went, I got it. Take me out in the car. I'm going to show you I can drive it. And voila, you now have that beautiful rhythm and you can drive the car smoothly. So something opens, but when that awareness opens, that obstacle or the inability to function that you just had, it perishes. It's gone. Just like it never existed. And sometimes we don't even remember. Because our life changes. We rise. We have a higher perspective. We have more freedom. We have more good. We have created the outpicturing of something that used to just be a desire. Now it's a thing. All right. You ready? Because I'm just getting revved up here. Okay, point two. You know, as a teenager driving that V-dub, I always put gas in it. 16, 17, I could do anything, right? But I got married to a wonderful man who always took care of the car. And I promise you, this is not an exaggeration. For 40 years, I never pumped gas. That I didn't even know there was a gas gauge. I never even worried about it because the man took really good care of the car all the time. Now, he, of course, doesn't do dishes or laundry, but he takes out the trash, and he took care of my car, and I was really happy about that. In 2010, we had our first encounter with him having an illness, and he was unable to put gas in my car for a lengthy period of time. And so for a while, my son would come over. He'd go get gas for me. Later, I would ask a girlfriend or somebody at church. Some of my girlfriends just felt sorry for me. They'd go, "How's your gas level? You want me to put the, I'll take your car out and get gas for you." And that worked for a while, and I really felt loved. I got to tell you, I really felt loved. But after 40 years of being spoiled that way, putting gas in my car, now I'm fully capable of it, right? Get it? I used to do it all the time. But the idea of me having to do it now and the struggles I had when I would go to do it, it just never turned out well. You know, like, there is no order at the gas station. People come in any old way. You think you're going to go there and somebody, I just hated that. No, there should be rules. They should all have the tank on the same side of the car. And there should be an easy in and an easy out. But it wasn't like that. And I didn't like that. And plus, I didn't like that whole, ooh, it's flammable. Ooh, it got on me. You know, I just became such a girl. So my husband became sick, and I began to feel that I was burdening the people that loved me, and I eventually figured out how to put gas in my car without making such a big dramatic thing out of it. But the truth was, I was uncomfortable. I want to tell you that I believe the revelation came for me as I was willing to acknowledge the discomfort I felt, and I developed a desire to be more comfortable when I put gas in my car. So I then began to think, I began to notice. I'd go to the gas station and I'd go, there is nobody here that looks like this is a big deal, right? And then I began to, you guys are not relating to this story at all. Anyhow, it happened. And then I just worked with that. I stayed with the desire. I want to be comfortable pumping gas. And then an extraordinary thing happened. He got well. And I mean, he got well. And I bought this cute little retro T-Bird. You might remember, I had it for like 15 minutes. We had moved here by now. So I got this adorable, lifelong desire to have this car. Woohoo! Manifested the car of my dreams. I'm all happy. But he couldn't fit in it. It's a tiny little car, front seat only. He could not get himself in. He could get in. One time he got in, but it was so hard getting him out that it frightened me. So we didn't put him in there anymore. And now what happens? Now my desire changed from wanting to be comfortable pumping gas to like, this is no sweat. My car, I own it, I'm going to do it. And pumping gas became easy. It was especially easier when I realized somebody showed me you could push that little button down, that you didn't have to stand there holding it with two hands all that time. But anyhow, I want you to see that it's the little things that once I learned that trick, I owned that I could and I desired to pump my own gas, and I have never gone back. You know, and it's again another taste of freedom. You have the desire. Here's something I can imagine, and then I step into it, I practice it, I do it. But the revelation comes in the yes, you can, in the validation that you can. And so I want to tell you that people sometimes ask me, but how do you know what's the voice of God? And what's the voice of ego? How do you tell them different? And I'm very quick to answer that by saying something I learned in the Course of Miracles. I'm not sure if it's in the book or if we just talk that way in that circle of people. But the answer to how can you tell the difference between God and ego? Ego always speaks first and loudest. And that's a really wonderful rule to embody. It's sort of like the three memo rule, you know? You know, I say, oh, no, that's wrong. I'm going to handle it this way. And if you sit on it a minute, you'll see that there is divine guidance. There can be a revelation that will take you in a different direction. But here is something I was thinking while I was writing the message yesterday. This part of the message, I was thinking that there's a simple way you can tell. The divine revelation will always bring you to a higher perspective. The divine revelation will always be grounded in God qualities, in the divine qualities. So if it's from God, it's good. Now, that doesn't mean sometimes we aren't a little bit afraid of our good. Right? Sometimes we have a little resistance. Change comes, can't really tell how it's going to end, so you got to sit in it, and it doesn't necessarily feel comfortable. So I recommend a practice of noticing, what do you feel? How is your body taking that information? Because if I can feel it and name it and recognize that there's just fear, then I know there's some little resistance in me somewhere. And now I know how to treat. I know that the simplest thing of all is to move from fear into love, to now contemplate those divine qualities of love. And that becomes a beautiful formula. That is the way that you can train yourself to feel and recognize and know that when that truth washes over you, it changes everything. As Eckhart said, something flashes upon my reason. And I think the only trick is to ask ourselves if we're teachable. That is the ongoing thing for us to look at. Holmes also said, this one comes from your Science of Mind textbook, the unity of good is always revelation. The unity of good is a revelation of the greatest importance. The unity of good is the revelation of the greatest, the most important thing for us to recognize, because then he goes on to talk about the oneness, the fatherhood, the brotherhood, the way we are all connected. And to the degree that we realize that unity as truth, that is, of course, the way it is reflected in our experience of being. So there are these patterns of thought. So it's not like one bad thought is going to take you to hell in a handbag. And I mean, by hell, I mean trouble in your life or problems or whatever. Your life is indeed a reflection of the patterns of thought that reveal, whether we like it or not, what we actually really believe. And that's why we pay attention to what we're thinking, because that's going to show you. That's going to show you. And it's like, was it Emerson that said, who you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear you, or something like that. Yeah, whatever. Okay, so I want to end with this. I want to sort of get to that wrap-up place by giving you very concrete image to take with you. So if you haven't found your little thing to resonate with yet, here it comes. Here it comes. This is it. Lived in Covina. My dad was living with us. New neighbors move in, and they decide they're going to do a recreation of the exterior of their home in every way. It was chaos for a long time. We weren't especially pleased with these neighbors because, oh, goodness, what they did was interesting. And one of the projects, the husband was a construction worker. One of his projects was to move their driveway. They had the corner lot to move the driveway from the main street entrance into the dead-end street. So this is our street, and they're going to move the driveway, and we're right next door to them. So it took weeks of teams of people tearing up the old, breaking out the garage door, mending the other part. Does any of this sound familiar to you, Rod? You're following along. And now they start building the form to pour the concrete for the new driveway. Now, my dad was a plasterer and dabbled in all kinds of construction stuff, him and his brothers. And my dad took a lawn chair out there every day and watched the shenanigans of all the workers. And then he would come in and he would report to me what's going on. So this story is a tribute to my dad on Father's Day. So they put the forms out, and Daddy would bring his iced tea in for a refill, or he'd come in to make his lunch, and he'd go, they're not doing it right. They're not doing it. It's not going to turn out well. And they finally get to the day where they're going to pour the concrete. They bring in the big cement truck, and they got a team of people there. They start at the first light of the day, and they're working, they're pouring, and they're doing that, and then they're leveling, and they're whatever it is that they do when they're just trying to, and they're doing the whole thing, and they're working, and my dad keeps coming in the house. He's going, yep, it's not going so good. they're not doing a very good job. And by the end of the day, they were in big trouble because the cement started to set up, right? And they're still out there trying to rearrange it and fix it in the places they didn't get it to properly. And in fact, when we went to bed, a couple of the neighbors brought over, and we plugged them in, all our house and their house, and we brought them lights so they could work after dark to try and save the driveway. Well, my dad was right. It didn't work. And what happened after that was that they had to bring in jackhammers, and they had to pull out the entire big, wide driveway and start all over again. It had to be a huge expense. It was tremendous labor. It was a costly process, and oh, the wife was so unhappy that we could hear her hollering next door for a long time. That's what happens when you don't set the form properly. And we're setting the forms for our future every day, with every thought, with every series of experiences, and how we react and what we decide we do with all of that. But here's the good news. Life is liquid, just like pouring that cement into the forms. Life is liquid, but the majority of the mistakes we make are the wrong turns, or the way we don't set the mold quite the way we thought we wanted it to turn out. It isn't like we need a jackhammer to change it. What God has done, God can undo. What we have done, we can undo as we align ourselves to the truth of our being, that we are individualized expressions of the divine, and that God is on our side. And so, don't even do that this late in the day. Oh, I thought you meant that. Oh, I'd be on it. So I wanted to, this is such a beautiful way to sort of wrap up all of those ideas. This is a book from Rob Bell. It's called What We Talk About When We Talk About God. Gorgeous read. I enjoy him so much. Christian minister, a little bit of a rebel. Of course, he'd have to be for me to like him, right? We do know things. We know them with every fiber in our being because they are revealed to us. They seize us and they won't let us go. They plant themselves deep in our hearts and they don't leave. So when we talk about God, when we talk about revelation, we are talking about our brushes with spirit, our awareness of the reverence that is humming within us, our senses of the nearness and the farness, one paradox after another. We do know things. There is a higher wisdom within. I don't have more than you, and you don't have more than I do. We all have these gorgeous flashes of wisdom. And so I will close with this quote from Ernest Holmes that really wraps it up nicely. The time has come in our spiritual evolution when we should awaken to the recognition that behind each one of us stands the eternal mind, that each has complete access to it, that each may come to it for inspiration and for revelation. The time has come. So let it be written. Take a deep breath, and we will now turn within and experience the powerful words of prayer. So at this time, I would invite any practitioners in the room, any ministers or ministerial interns, if you would just stand, and if you desire, circle this room so that we can magnify the consciousness of what is about to happen. So much has been spoken. So much has been written, and so much revealed. We pause and just allow all of those words and ideas just sort of sprinkle around this room so that we might tune in to our desires, our inspiration, the gem that has been given us this day. And just feel the love of God within you. I feel that love. And I know it is the movement of life. It is the activity of spirit itself in the body. It is that which moves through this room. It is the energy of the sunshine, and it is the beautiful process of leaves greening on a tree and blades of grass growing on the lawn. The winged creatures flying across the sky. I feel the love of God in this experience of living. And I know that there is no place where we are separated or blocked from this amazing presence, this love, this wisdom, because there is no place where God is not. Therefore, right here in this room, right at the center of each individual being is the fullness of spirit itself. And I know that as we align ourselves in full awareness to this unity, this experience of oneness with life, I know that something magnificent happens. That there is a quickening within us that opens our hearts and our minds to an even greater ability to receive the good that is flowing right now toward us. It is the outpouring of God's sweet grace, freely given. And so we allow ourselves to see that we are vessels, that we are channels of this wisdom, that we are the containers that accept this good, this grace, these revelations. We allow that divine intuition within us to stir and to be that which guides us. We know that always after the dark night comes the day, and in the clarity of that light, we are able to see divine things that are hidden and yet absolutely and fully present. So there's healing happening right now in this very room. The bodies, the molecules in our bodies are shifting and moving. The inspiration of our creative expression is stimulated in such a way that new ideas are flowing, that those things that have felt like they were lost are now clear to see and to claim again. And the truth beyond all truths, above all truths, the ultimate truth that is everywhere present at all times is so available and accessible that we just embody it. we allow that to be the healing force. It is that which keeps divine order in this universe. It is that which restores order in our own lives in this moment of awareness. And so we say yes to God. We say yes to life. We say yes to our desires, and we allow ourselves to be open to this beautiful revealing of perfection in body, mind, and soul. So I know our relationships are blessed, that even our loved ones that we may have concern about, that they too stand in the presence of this amazing wisdom, this God-given grace. And therefore, we can stand together and we can say, life is good. Life is good. I rejoice in this truth. I rejoice in knowing and recognizing that which is eternal. And so I say, thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit, for this clarity of vision, this deep inner knowing, this ability to say yes. Yes, I accept and I receive. And in this sense of deep, exquisite gratitude, I simply release the words of this prayer into that divine law that always responds affirmatively. And together we say, and so it is. Amen, amen.